When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another edition of the Pucks with Hags podcast, powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network. I believe this is the 84th episode of the Pucks with Hags podcast. We'll be talking about the Bruins-Leafs playoff series today. I'm your host, Joe Haggerty. You can find my work at joehaggerty.substack.com. Sign up for a premium membership to get all of my NHL and Bruins writing sent straight directly to your inbox. I also write columns, and I'm writing daily during the playoffs for the bostonsportsjournal.com, or Boston Sports Journal. So check out bostonsportsjournal.com for all of my Bruins writings. We do a live game blog, all kinds of good stuff going on over there. With me today, I have boston.com's Connor Ryan and the New England Hockey Journal's Mark Diver. Thank you to both of you guys for joining us, and let's just give a little love real quick before we get into it to our sponsor, Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America and the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Instead of battling thousands of other players that could be pros or sharks, you simply pick more or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll right in. If you chose Austin Matthews last night, you probably, in a lot of the offensive categories, you probably did pretty well. He was pretty damn good in game 2 against the Bruins. He had a superstar game. So it's a fun and pretty simple way to do things, picking more or less in the stat categories. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Mark, I'll go to you first. Just thoughts on the first two playoff games. It's even going up to Toronto. The old hockey cliches, it's not a playoff series until one of the home team loses. We're at that point right now. Toronto really had to have that game last night. Austin Matthews, John Tavares. There was a few players I thought that stepped up and played really well for Toronto. Conversely, I think the Bruins, it's about midway through the second period on, just did not look like they wanted it as bad as the Toronto Maple Leafs did. But your thoughts on the first two games as we head to Toronto for games 3 and 4?
Well, I think it's kind of what we expected, or at least what some of us expected. If I don't, I don't know how anyone could think that, say, the Bruins were going to sweep the first two and just roll. You know, that's not how it works. Toronto, obviously, a massive amount of talent on their roster. And last night, I think, uncharacteristically, I guess, based on past years, they really dug deep and out-battled Boston to get that win that really they had to have, as you said. So I think it's a game the Bruins could have won with a little more. They certainly got breaks on the two video reviews and all of that, but it was a winnable game. And now they go to Toronto, where they're certainly capable of winning. So we'll see how it goes starting Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a close series. I think they're going to be, I don't think they're all going to be like game one with 5-1 win. I think these are going to be, for the most part, one goal games, very easy and very even, sort of back and forth where either team can win. Both teams have definite strengths and both teams have flaws that can be exploited. But it may come down to sort of a back and forth battle where the team that's in the more desperate position, like the Leafs were last night, has that little bit extra to pull out the victory. But anything you saw, Connor, last night and in the first couple of games, any observations or trends you're seeing at this point, a couple games in?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of echo what Max said, right? Like, I think in game two, frustrating in terms you weren't able to kind of land that knockout punch where the Maple Leafs don't have William Nylander, who, again, who knows where that man even is, what happened in terms of what his availability is. But if he is able to get back into the lineup and whether they overload their top six or put them back down on the third line, which they did. That creates matchup issues for the Bruins. But I just think you look at that game too, you know, as Mark said, weren't able to really, handle their forecheck, really struggled to break up passes. It's kind of like what you saw a little bit from like the Florida series. Like is Toronto that physically imposing as Florida? No, but a lot of it's the same things where you can't kind of get out of your own way. You're spending way too much time in your own zone. And if you do that against a team with as much offense as Toronto, it doesn't matter if it's Swayman and Net, Ullmark, Tim Thomas, like that team is going to bury their chances against you if you keep on hanging around in your own zone. I think that was kind of the case in game two.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Montgomery said after the game that he sort of put it on the forwards for not taking over the game in the third period. And rightfully so, I guess, to a degree. But I honestly thought the defensemen for the Bruins struggled big time in game two. Some of it, I think, was obviously Andrew Peak going down in the second period. I think that's a sneaky important injury, given how well he's played for them. As a shutdown guy, as a physical guy, as an in-your-face sort of, you know, the kind of guy you need in the playoffs on the back end. And once he went down, I think you saw everybody else have to play a little bit more and have a little bit more responsibility. Perhaps that played into Kevin Shattenkirk being on the penalty kill in the second period when John Tavares scores that goal. Kevin Shattenkirk logged exactly 6 minutes and 11 seconds on the penalty kill during the regular season for the Bruins. Averaged 6 seconds of penalty kill time a game. Was
not great
on the penalty kill. And then all of a sudden in game two of the playoffs, he's out there in a key moment in the second period on the PK because Grzelcyk's in the box after taking the interference penalty and Peak is out. So, I wonder, Connor, how much this Peak injury, if it turns into something where he's going to miss a few games, is going to impact them and what the move might potentially be if he is injured.
Yeah, no, you're right, Joe. It's a sneaky big loss if he isn't out there. Again, it's sometimes – is Andrew Peak like this flashy player? No, but sometimes in the playoffs, you said you need the guy that's going to get in your face, make this simple, smart play to get the puck out. Like there hasn't been times where he's been, you know, putting out fires necessarily, or there's been shifts where you're like, all right, you can't do that against a team with Austin Matthews and Marner and all those guys out there. Like he's been doing the smart plays that build the kind of the winning game. And I think you saw in the first period, the Bruins were kind of doing that. They were landing good hits. They were making kind of the smart play. They were, you know, moving the puck when needed to, flipping it out when needed to, and, you know, learning to fight another day. And a guy like Andrew Peak, I think, kind of plays into that. And the domino effect of him being out, as you said, like, yeah, I think you can add Weatherspoon in the mix, but you can make the argument that, like, you could have gone with, like, Peak Weatherspoon if they were both healthy for a thing and add a little bit more, you know, rigidity to the bottom of your decor. Because it's weird how they kind of went away with that group a little bit. I understand like Shattenkirk kind of drew more back into the lineup down the stretch because they needed to give that power play a look. But right. you look at that that Florida game down in Florida where it was Peak Weatherspoon. They drew most of their matchups against the Bennett Kachuk line, and they were great in that one. And after the game, Montgomery mentioned how good they were. You think that would be kind of a barometer test in terms of what that third pairing could do in the playoffs? Haven't seen it yet. So again, if Peak's out there, you imagine Weatherspoon drops in somewhere in the lineup, but it's still a huge loss if he's not available.
Yeah, and Mark, you might look at a matchup against the Maple Leafs, and obviously it's Shattenkirk, and I wanted to see him running the point on that top power play unit. I've been sort of stumping for that for a while, and I think it's looked good at points, and certainly I like the splitting of the power play units and making them two even units and both of them being threats and the way they're doing it now, I think is actually a good thing and has gotten them some power play goals. But I guess, Mark, you have to weigh like the importance of Shattenkirk as a power play guy, as an offensive guy versus Weatherspoon potentially being in there against a high powered Maple Leafs team that wants to score goals, maybe going for the defensive option, the penalty killing option, the more, you know, shutdown option against a team like that, rather than trying to play like goal for goal and putting one of the offensive guys out there like Shattenkirk.
Well, yeah, that's kind of a dilemma, right? Do you need your power play to be productive, but you also need your PK to hold the Leafs off. And, you know, with the talent they have that they can put out there, you know, it seems like maybe the PK takes precedence right now over the power play. But, you know, this this has happened in past Bruins playoff runs where, and other teams too, you find out you need like seven, eight, maybe nine defensemen in the playoffs because guys are, go down left and right. We're only two games in here, and we don't know what Peak's injury is. Maybe he plays on Wednesday, but
yep,
you know, it's just the war of attrition has started, and you know the depth that you have on D is critical.
Why don't you go and get the Prize Picks app? Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America and the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Instead of battling thousands of other players that could be pros or sharks, you simply pick more or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll right in. You can get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's upcoming playoffs, during the Stanley Cup playoffs, as well as I mentioned. You can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with basketball, hockey, and anything else today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It has something for every sports fan, from basketball to hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. You can pick LeBron, Connor McDavid, and Jude Bellingham all in the same entry. How cool is that? You're going to want to get involved right now. David Pastrnak, you can do goals, you can do shots, maybe you can do turnovers because sometimes he has a lot of those in the game as well. You just pick more or less than. It's fun and pretty simple. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. If Peak, let's say theoretically Peak can't go in the next game and they have to dig into their depth a little bit here, and maybe even they put Weatherspoon in and they have to, you know, they bring in another defenseman. Derek Forbort was down in Providence to play, coming back from the surgery that he had and sort of making this miraculous comeback to at least be available potentially if they need him at some point. And Mason Lowry was getting some game action down in Providence as well. What did you get out of the Forbort going down to Providence and watching him, and how has Lowry been since he came down there?
Well, Forbort, obviously that was a surprise. I went to practice last week and I'm looking around, you know, you kind of take attendance at the beginning of practice, right? Who's here? And I see this guy, this big guy I'm like, who the heck is this guy? So I went down to get a closer look, and I'll be damned, it was him. Totally unexpected, right? I mean,
yep.
We presumed that his season was over. But so he plays Friday night, obviously rusty, right? Not having played for a while. But, you know, in practice, as he went through the drills and so forth, you start to see, okay, this guy is an NHL player. You can kind of, you know, the things he does are different than what some of the other inexperienced guys do.
Yep.
Sunday he was better. He didn't play Saturday. So he played Friday and Sunday. He was good on Sunday. He was physical. It was kind of a physical game, unusual for the last game of the season where both teams didn't have anything to play for. He was going at some of the Hartford players pretty good, the way he needs to play.
Yep.
Now, I don't know, do you stick him in? It seems like a big ask to ask him to jump in there against Austin Matthews and company.
I think so too.
All this time off. So after the weekend, he's closer to being able to do that. But, you know, I like I said, that's a big ask to throw him in there. And as for Lowry, I mean, I can't imagine him playing in a game like last night's. I just can't. His defending and his decision making some of the time just have I don't think it's quite there yet. that's the bottom line. I think the kid is a, has the potential to be a good player, but is he going to help you this year against Toronto in the playoffs? I'm skeptical.
I mean, that speaks then to like some depth issues. If they do get an injury or two and you start having to, call upon defensemen, this war of attrition that always happens in the playoffs, if you're relying on a guy that has played zero NHL games in the last like few months and had a few AHL tune-ups, and a guy like Lowry, and I know they have a couple other players in Providence that they could potentially call up, but it's the depth would seem to fall off pretty quickly for the Bruins if there's a couple injuries.
No question. I mean, that's the case, I think, for pretty much every team in the NHL. The depth thing. How many defensemen can you have in your organization that are capable of stepping into a playoff series in the first round? Not a lot of teams have guys stockpiled that they can just call up.
Connor, one guy who I thought was pretty good in game one, not great in game two, Charlie McAvoy. He needs to be a difference maker in this series consistently. Like, he's the best defenseman for either team, best two-way defenseman, best number one defenseman, whatever you want to say. But he's the best player on the back end for either group and needs to be a difference maker. And last night, he was just okay. No hits. I was amazed at that when I went back and rechecked the score sheet after it was over. And was beaten by Austin Matthews on the game-winning goal, which was admittedly, I thought, a great play. I had some people complaining that Austin Matthews violated Rule 67 and that he was carrying the puck for multiple steps while catching it and closing his hand. Or there was some salty people that wanted to get the rule book out on that one. But I just think it was a great play by Austin Matthews. And McAvoy let a guy behind him that's going to kill you every time when that happens. But he needs to be much better for the balance of the series if the Bruins are going to win playoff games.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have we seen in the playoffs, Joe, situations where McAvoy is the guy that delivers kind of that tone-setting hit or shifts the momentum with a big hit? And it's not just the physicality. I think you look at that game on Monday, it's like the details I think were lacking at times for a guy like that. And you can't have that from a guy who's your number one defenseman, your captain in waiting down the road, a guy that, especially with peak out, he's going to get the lion's share of these minutes, and you just can't have those lapses in details. There's a couple of times where he mishandled the puck, or times where it just feels like he was like in the NHL when you're playing the video game and your Wi-Fi cuts out and like you kind of like lose connection for a second there. There's a few of those situations where you just can't have that, whether it's like not being able to keep in a puck, keep in that ozone possession that the team kind of struggled to get at times. You just need more from him. I mean, you're going to need him to do everything, but that's why he's Charlie McAvoy. That's why he's your number one defenseman. You need a guy like that to step up and deliver in those moments. And I think the details is probably the most jarring thing, because you just can't have these kind of stop and start situations with your execution, not against a team like Toronto that's just so good that if you're, spending time in your own zone, or you're missing those breakouts, or you're not pushing the puck through cleanly transition, this team you're going up against is so talented that they're going to bury you every single time you do that.
Yeah. And once again, Mark, like, McAvoy needs to be better. But once again, I saw a lot of moments where Hampus Lindholm was having a lot of trouble when he was under heavy pressure. Getting the puck out, hearing the footsteps at times, like anticipating guys coming crashing down on him when they were coming hard on the forecheck. And, he's going to need – this is a big series for him. Like, this is a big playoff run this time around, given how much he struggled against Florida last year, and he was obviously took that big hit in Carolina the year before. But he has not shown enough in the playoffs for me to believe – that he's the same player he has at his best moments during the regular season, the playoffs, until we see it in the postseason, and it hasn't been there yet.
No, you're right. Both him and McAvoy need, strong bounce back games on Wednesday. I'm not necessarily an X's and O's guy, but I wonder if Toronto adjusted something on their forecheck that ended up giving the Bruins trouble, because, certainly we all saw that they had moments when Boston struggled with it and, didn't move the puck crisply. So I don't know about that, but you know, as far as Charlie's hits, did he not bury Matthew Knies on like the first shift of the game? How does he end?
That's true.
I think that was him, right?
Yes.
At least once, maybe twice.
No, you're right. Yes.
So I forgot about that. Maybe the guy recording the hits was late getting to his seat and missed that first shift. But
that traffic's rough. You know how it is.
or maybe they just don't like Charlie McAvoy.
Yes.
Maybe they're like, we're gonna give him no hits in this game and see how he likes that. Even though it's supposed to be an NHL where they give everybody a hit now for everything, right?
Yeah, and that, I mean, that was a positive start, that first shift, the physicality of it. You could be optimistic that things were going to go well, that this was going to be a good performance based on that first shift.
I liked the first period.
Yeah.
I thought the Bruins were good in the first period. I thought they were moving fast. They were physical. They were just playing simple. They were dumping pucks in deep, getting on the forecheck, and just playing smart, like good hockey. And then when Pastrnak gets that goal right at the end of the first period, you're like, all right, this looks like it's going to, they're going to start rolling here. And then once they, took the too many men in the ice penalty and Grizzly took that penalty in the second period, it kind of just, it seemed like they were in the mud for the rest of the game after that. And Toronto definitely got life. Mark, what do you make of what we've seen so far from the goalie rotation? Obviously, Swayman was lights out, excellent in game one. I thought that was the right choice to go with him, just given the body of work that he's had against Toronto this year, given the season that he had and on the whole, and given that he had never had a chance to start a series. I thought he was due to get the call there. And then they go with Ullmark in game two, and I kind of wonder if they've sort of like decided or told the goalies, we're going to start with a rotation the first few games of the series, maybe the first four of the games of the series back and forth. And then after that, it'll be about, merit and who's playing best or sort of feel where they're going to go as far as the rotation goes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can question the rotation at this point with the series 1-1. I guess what happens in game three will, kind of maybe open the debate a little bit. If if Swayman comes up with a big performance and they win the game, you're going to go back with Ullmark in game four just to continue the rotation. I don't know. I think that would be a questionable call. The rotation's gotten them to this point. I don't think it's worked out fine to this point. And so why not stick with it until it doesn't work out? And then we'll see.
Or until, Mark, to your point, desperation sets in and you just you just need to do what you think is going to win you the hockey game and go with that player based on feel or how they're going. Like I've been of the thought that the best rotation, the most fair rotation, like a good way to do it would be just play the goalie until he loses. And then you move on to the other one. And look, sometimes it's not going to be about the goalie. The Bruins did not lose game two because Linus Ullmark was not good. I thought he was brilliant, made a bunch of saves. That one save he made where he just swept the puck with a glove and basically swept it off the goal line. And they had to review it to make sure he actually made the save was outstanding. But he was on balance very good. The first penalty kill that they killed, he made like four or five saves. He was excellent. So he wasn't the reason they lost in game two, but I think if you change the goalie with each loss, that gives both goalies a couple chances in the series. You're going to make sure, unless you sweep, that both goalies get in the series and don't sit for too long. And if you do sweep, that's a good problem to have. If you swept a playoff series and one of the goalies wasn't able to play, for a few, for a week or 8 days or whatever it was. Connor, your thoughts on the goalie rotation, what you think we're going to see in game three, and if you think that rotation is going to change at all based on the circumstances of the series here.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how the Bruins do structure it in this series, because I think it was one of the last regular season games when Montgomery first mentioned, like, oh, we might, you know, switch off, where it's maybe to the situation where they go like the first four games, alternate, and then kind of go from there. But as you guys said, what happens if all of a sudden it's game three, Strandman, you know, has another 35 save on 36 shot performance and goes, gets momentum back on your side. And again, like, Swayman like hasn't been like strong down the second half of the season, but like, look what he's done against Toronto. He'll be 6-0 against Toronto dating back to last year. He's got a 9.63 save percentage over those games. Like, that's part of the mental thing too. If you're Toronto and you've got all this high powered offense and Swayman's not giving you anything, and this has been a running trend, maybe this is a situation where you ride the hot hand. So you do wonder if they do change that approach and make it kind of more feel-based, whether it's Strayman's on a roll, you've got the momentum there, you've got the numbers backing it up. And again, it like just comes down to wins and losses. And that's kind of how I viewed it going into the playoffs, is like you start off with alternating guys in games one and two, and depending on how the results are, you ride the hot hand and go from there. As you said, if you win in four games or five games, it's a good problem to have. Survive in advance, you go back, reset the clock, moving into the next round. But if it's Swayman in game three, which you imagine it will be, and he wins, creates another interesting debate. I feel like, depending on how long this playoff run goes, we're going to have this conversation, win or loss, especially after a win. That's when it gets really complicated. So,
no, it's true. And the NHL is watching, right? The rest of the NHL is watching how the situation plays out with the Bruins, because it's so unique to have two equal goalies like this that are both brilliant and both basically could be number ones. If they ever prove that they can be like a 60 plus, game guy during the regular season, but they both have that ability. And they're both pretty equal. So it's a very unique situation as to how they're going to handle it and what they're going to do. And it could create a template for, in such a copycat league, if other people have two great goalies, to kind of do the same thing. I would fully expect Jeremy Swayman to play game three, and then it'll be interesting to see what happens after that. Connor, adjustments that you would make for game three, any lineup changes or anything you would change going into game three based on what we saw in the first two games in Boston?
I mean, I think it all depends right on if Peak's available. I think regardless of what it is, I think you have to add a guy like Weatherspoon into the bottom of the deep here just to add a little bit more of that simplified hockey for this time of year. Up front, like, I wouldn't necessarily put in like a guy like JVR yet in terms of changing things up. Actually, like, I don't hate like the personnel they have up front. It's just you need to get more rolling. And especially, like, I think it all comes down to, as you said, Joe, like the transition game, getting the puck out and letting the forwards kind of get to work. Because, like, if JVR comes in, are you slotting out like a guy like Lauko, who I think's been, moving his feet pretty well, trying to impact the shifts he's out there? Like, I don't see any changes up front necessarily. I think it all comes down to, one, what Peak's going to do, and then if he is healthy, if he's not, how else you kind of change that personnel? Because I think it all starts from there, breaking the puck out, solving Toronto's forecheck, and kind of getting things going. Because I think Samsonov had a good game in game two, but, like, need to generate more ozone time. I think the Bruins were, I think Toronto had a 37-17 edge in shot scoring chances. Like, not a winning formula. You need to get pucks on net against a guy like Samsonov. You need to get rolling in the offensive zone.
Yeah, and they've been outshot both games in this series, and I definitely, if they've lost the ozone battle, and that's something that needs to be changed and needs to be figured out. I'm not sure JVR gets into the series unless a forward gets hurt. I don't know, but I will say Jim Montgomery's MO is consistently to, get guys in. And I think he does that to a degree in the playoffs as well. Not wanting players to sit for too long. I'm with you. I think Weatherspoon would probably draw in for game three, whether it was as an injury replacement, whether it was as a replacement for Kevin Shattenkirk. I think Matt Grizzlick was not great in game two either. He was getting thrown around all over the place.
Ryan Reeves was like,
Was out there a ton against Ryan Reeves. Yeah. And Reeves had this ability to, like, pin him down and post him up in front of the net every time Grizzlick was out there. He basically, like, grabbed him through in front of the net and was just, like, bodying him, trying to get position. And Grizzlick trying to anticipate that contact and that battle down low. That's why he gets the interference call, which might have been a little bit of a veteran move by Tavares hitting the deck to get the call. But, credit to him for getting the call. Any changes adjustments you would make, Mark, headed into game three?
Just Weatherspoon. I'd get him in there, for either Shattenkirk or Grizz, or you know, as a replacement for Peak. Obviously, we don't know where that stands. Up front, I think I'd stick with the group, although obviously they need to generate more. You know, as far as Reeves goes, I thought he had a very effective game last night. And you know, if you look at it as you narrow it down to Maroon versus Reeves, well, Maroon wins game one. Okay, he gets the advantage. Last night, it was clearly Reeves had the advantage. You know, Maroon, you know, geez, his lack of speed. We all know that's a thing. But boy, when he's has a chance to go in on a breakaway and just shovels it to the next guy, you know, you could just see right there that geez, this guy is really slow. So if you didn't, yep. if you didn't know that, if you weren't aware of that already, there it was. But the you know, the, I don't know. Do you take him out? No, I don't think you take him out. I think you need what he can bring and what he brought in game one. So I wouldn't make any changes up front at this point.
Yeah, and we may see him, you know, with his legs because he hasn't played in a long time and he's only played a few games, that it might go back and forth, right? Like, he'll have good legs one game.
Yeah.
And not so much the next, because he's going to need his best legs, to your point, to keep up with what's going on and at least be like a serviceable fourth line guy. But like, what I liked about game one was he was fast enough that he was getting on defensemen in the corner when they were retrieving pucks, and he was laying big hits on them. Yeah. Like, as long as he's fast enough to get there and throw the body on those guys and start accumulating those hits when they're going back and trying to get retrieve pucks out of the corner, like, that's perfect. Like, that's really all you need out of him, in addition to sort of keeping up with what's going on and not being a liability. But yeah, I agree. I wouldn't change anything up front. I think you do need to stick with Maroon, because I think he gives them a different kind of attitude, I think, when they're out there, and a little more courage, and it gives them somebody when Reeves starts, like, cause at one point Reeves was messing with Grizzlick and Maroon came over and started chirping in his ear and shoving him around. And I think you need somebody like that, that's willing to do that kind of thing with a guy like Reeves when he's out there. But it'll be interesting. I just think they need to play better as a unit. And I would, you know, putting Weatherspoon in, I totally agree with that. All right. Question of the week, this tweet of the week, BH Bossman 37. We kind of covered this a little bit, but McAvoy was a beast in game one. The Leafs have no D-man that can match his two-way abilities. He needs to be a difference maker consistently. Tonight, he was not good enough. And I think you can say that about, you know, a lot of players. There was more than a few that weren't good enough in that game. One thing I've seen that is slightly concerning to me, Mark, is Brad Marchand's obviously a really good player, and he's a key player for the Bruins, and the physicality he brings, the emotion he brings, all that stuff. But I've found lately, down the stretch and in the playoffs, it does seem like there are times when he's almost like a half beat slower with things than he used to be. He doesn't always catch the puck as cleanly when it's coming to him. You know, he's not able to sort of like, you know, get that separation as much as he did, as he used to be able to do against defenders to create plays for himself when he tries to, you know, do the one-on-one stuff. I just wonder if, like, you know, the full season, the age, all that stuff is sort of like having a little bit of an impact on him.
Yeah, that's a fair question. I wonder if, you know, first playoff run as captain, whether the weight of that is also, he's feeling that a little bit, you know, cause last night was the kind of game, you know, like in the last 10 minutes of the game, you're kind of waiting. Okay. In the past, we've seen him, you know, make a play at that point in the game. And, you know, it didn't work out last night. It's only one night, and you know, we'll see what happens going forward. But yeah, he hasn't quite been on his game lately. I think that's fair to say.
Connor, anybody you're looking for to break out in game three forward wise?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Marchand's a key one, right? Where, as you said, like the weight of, you know, the captaincy, those things. Like, I feel like you can tell when Marchand's pressing when it's either he's like flying into, you know, a body of skaters trying to make something happen, trying to do things by himself. Or I think you kind of said it too, Joe, like his ability to, like, you know, connect on one timers feels like the execution's just off there. And I understand he's more of a facilitator on that power play, but there was that one time where a seam pass went through and you would hope that's a situation where he kind of rifles the puck home and just misses it there. So
yep.
We need more from him. And again, I think it's just that whole top line. Like, I think DeBrusque, you know, had obviously the great game one, wasn't able to clear the puck out, leading to Tavares's goal in game two. But that whole line, I think you need to get going between Marchand, DeBrusque, and Coyle. And I know they're kind of tasked with being kind of more of your 200-foot shutdown line. They're getting a lot of minutes against Matthews, which take away from that. But you need that line, especially to start, you know, landing at least a few punches here. Again, all of it comes down to, I think, breaking the puck out and getting in the offensive zone. But you need to get shots up against a guy like Samsonov. Like, this isn't this unbreakable defense you're going up against. So you should be able to land punches against this team.
Yeah, and to Marchand's credit, he did do a good job of looking like a sniper took him out when he had that Tyler Bertuzzi slash to the back of his leg to make sure that the refs saw that and they got the call. So that was a nice veteran move right there. All right, let's thank our sponsors at this point. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America and the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Instead of battling thousands of other players that could be pros or sharks, you simply pick more or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll right in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with basketball, hockey, baseball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. They have something for every sports fan, from basketball and hockey to League of Legends, whatever the hell that is, and everything in between. You can pick LeBron, Connor McDavid, Jude Bellingham, all the same entry. Very exciting stuff. So download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Connor Ryan, Mark Diver, thank you very much for joining us.
For having us, Joe.
All right. Yeah, take care, guys. You got it, Mark. We'll see you all after games 3 and 4. Thanks for listening. We'll see you at the ring.